I want to read part of a rather complicated and lengthy story from John's Gospel, chapter 4. There came a woman of Samaria to draw water. Jesus said to her, "Give me a drink," for his disciples had gone away into the city to buy food. The Samaritan woman said to him, "How is it that you, a Jew, ask a drink of me, a woman of Samaria?" Jesus said to her, "Go call your husband and come here." The woman answered him, "I have no husband." Jesus said to her, "You're right in saying you have no husband, for you have had five husbands, and he whom you now have is not your husband." This he said truly. The woman said to him, "Sir, I perceive that you are a prophet." Just then his disciples came. They marveled that he was talking with this woman, but none said, "What do you wish?" or "Why are you talking with her?" So the woman left her water jar and went away into the city and said to the people, "Come and see a man who told me all that I ever did. Can this be the Christ?" Many Samaritans from that city believed in him because of the woman's testimony, "He told me all that I ever did." So when the Samaritans came to him, they asked him to stay with them, and he stayed 2 days, and many more believed because of his word. Kind of a fascinating story. It starts out as a run-of-the-mill encounter, of which there are never run-of-the-mill encounters in Jesus' life. A rather guarded, complex woman from a foreign country, engaged in conversation by Jesus the Jew of Nazareth. And she quite rightly is guarded and constrained. "Why would you be asking me for a drink? Go call your husband." "Don't have one." And that's it. "No, that's right," Jesus said. "You've had five, and the one you're with is not your husband." Probably not the poster child for virtue in that town. And yet she gets it. "I perceive that you are a prophet." And she goes back to her village in another country and says, "Come and see this guy. He understood. He knew me for who I am. He told me everything I've ever done. Can this be the Christ?" And others come and they hear, maybe, him tell them their story in an accepting and positive way. He's invited to join them, and essentially a whole country is converted by this unlikely missionary, the woman at the well. The unlikely missionary who's freed from emotional constraint and guilt and a checkered past by the one Lord Christ of God, who knows her, understands her, accepts her as she is, and finds a way to make of her something of a star, an unlikely missionary. There are lots of unlikely missionaries in our midst and in the midst of our country. An example, perhaps you remember about the time the millennium was clicking over. There were lists of the key important world-changing events that occurred during the 20th century. And on those lists, on almost all of those lists, was the rather unlikely encounter in Akron, Ohio, in 1935, between two men, one named Bill W., one named Dr. Bob, the two co-founders of Alcoholics Anonymous. Dr. Bob and Bill W. essentially ran into each other and saw in each other something of themselves, told each other their story, and said, maybe this way of telling, this way of being, has a chance to be of use. And you would be hard-pressed to find a community anywhere on earth that doesn't have friends of Bill W. You can go on a Mediterranean cruise and be in the middle of a vacation, and chances are somewhere on that boat will be a little sign that says, Friends of Bill W. Meeting, such and such a place, such and such a time. And these unlikely missionaries are helping people stay strong and get well. And they're persistent at it too. The most common outcome of one encounter with a friend of Bill W., or even a course of treatment in a recovery program, is relapse. But there's a persistence. There's a persistent missionary zeal, if you will, in a very quiet kind of way, that has literally changed our world. It's certainly changed the lives of many people in ways that they would never have expected and would regard as miraculous. During a time in my life when I was sort of between careers, I spent a year working as a therapist in a drug and alcohol treatment program, and I met one of Bill W.'s most effective ambassadors, high school dropout, ex-convict, in his mid to late 50s, had about a half a set of teeth and the most engaging grin you've ever seen. His name is Roger. And Roger understood more than most people ever could imagine he would understand. Roger's message to hardcore, arrogant, frightened people, and by the way, arrogance and fear are sort of two sides of the same coin, was quite simple. Simply get real. There's nothing you have done that I haven't seen or done. No place you've been that I haven't at least encountered. And let me tell you how to get out of that. And Roger would tell his story, and in the sharing, this unlikely missionary healed as a therapist more effectively than anyone I've ever seen. There's a kind of social support that works its way through the telling of stories and the accepting of people that the church is better at it than you think. We, I think, sometimes look at ourselves and look at other churches and other denominations and maybe even especially more critically in other denominations and say, well, they haven't gotten anywhere close to right. And we do, and of course that arrogance and fear are two sides of the same coin. We really have it more right than we think. The research that went into this book that my colleague Bob Beckley and I put out a few years ago, Clergy Responses to People with AIDS, told us many things, the most important of which were the church leaders and church people are more accepting and tolerant than you think. And they become even more accepting and tolerant once they actually have personal encounters with people who are suffering. And it's the same principle that underscores any type of recovery process, 12-step or otherwise. Once you know and understand and can hear the story and can find in the story of someone else commonality with yours, well, you both, in a sense, become missionaries for healing and growth. The church does that corporately and collectively in an odd kind of way. My latest piece of research is called Is Religion a Health Resource for the Poor? And as it turns out, there's a very qualified yes to that. In this age where healthcare is an increasingly scarce resource, the church, through its ability to both teach and support emotionally and socially, is a health resource. And the link between religion and health, the positive link between those two concepts, is actually stronger for people of lesser means and lower income. We're getting it more right than we think. How does that play out at the end of the day? Well, all of us have a story. All of us, I suspect, if we were to meet Jesus at a well or somewhere in a public place, would be more guarded than not initially. And we might hear him tell us what unlikely missionaries always seem to tell folks. There's more good in you than you think. There's more good that you can do than you imagine. The essence of Jesus' life and ministry was to become a partner and share in commonality and communion, literally, all that we have ever done. The woman at the well heard that story and also heard beneath it a level of acceptance and also a challenge and an opportunity to tell the story. The next time you find yourself at a well of some sort, maybe sitting quietly, maybe reflecting on where your life has been, where you hope your life will next go, imagine yourself an unlikely missionary, hearing the story of your life told as the story of this woman's life was told to her by the Prince of Peace. There's more good in you than you think. There's more good that you can do than you imagine. And the next unlikely missionary, well, it might well be you. And in the company of Dr. Bob and Bill W. and Roger and all of the unnamed and unsung heroes of encounters people have had in churches and communities, they are part of us, and we are just like them. Unlikely missionaries, and in our own way, stars in the life Jesus has given us and sends us forth in peace. Amen.